Welcome back to part two of today's Corolla Classics. Now, let's hear another listener request from Aaron Blank. He writes, one other request I forgot was an interview where Chris Boehm, one of Adam's old high school friends, he was without Ray, and they were talking...
Childhood friends.
Childhood friends, yeah, even before high school, that's right. And says they were talking about Chris's dad farting in a chair and saying, speak up, old toothless one. It always... Aaron's right. That does make Adam laugh every time he tells this story. And Aaron says, like previously stated, keep up the great work. Well, thanks, Aaron. And we do have that clip. It is from 2009.
I always just think of a Kamado bottle full of water.
Oh, boy.
I think about like every day of my life. It's Adam Carolla Show, episode 63. Chris in studio. There's a later one with Chris, Ray, and Donnie. This one is just Chris. This one's from May of 2009. This is right when I first met Chris. I met him at the Shakespeare event. He tried to sell me like one of the charity motorcycles Adam won that I think he gave to Chris. He's like, yeah, it's only like 25 grand. Like, I don't have my motorcycle. I don't have that kind of money. Very nice dude. This is a great interview. This is part one. Part two tomorrow on the Carolla Classics feed. Until then, check this out.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Very exciting. Very exciting podcast indeed. Bringing to the show for the first time a man you've heard about many, many times, but I don't believe you've ever heard him. My oldest buddy, Chris Boehm. Chris?
Hello, hello.
Chris and I go way, way, way back. Where did we start?
I believe we met on the gridiron. At North Hollywood Park, or at Beeman Park.
Beeman Park, that's right, where we first started playing for the East Valley Trojans.
About 9 years old.
I was already a wily veteran by then. I had played 2 years, played on the farm team, also called the Tro Babes, which, you know what, even though I was seven, I still didn't like that fucking name, Tro Babes. I mean, it was like Trojans, but babies, like
sounds
Trojan
sissy.
Babies, but it sounded wussy, and I, you know, in a time when you're playing Pop Warner ball, you know, your pop warned you. So I played Farm, and I played Gremlins, and then I think I met you first year Mighty Mites.
Right, first year to Mighty Mites, that's right.
And Chris, you were living in a crappy apartment with your newly divorced mom.
On Bloomfield behind the church. Yep, with my mom and three brothers and sisters.
And so living in an apartment, in a crappy apartment with a lot of brothers and sisters. And so we were both poor, and we both came from sort of broken families, and we immediately became best friends. And Chris got off to a pretty promising start. Like, I remember you were a good student. I remember actually... when we did our football banquet at the end of the year, I think they gave a trophy out to all the kids that got decent grades. I don't quite remember how it worked.
Yeah, it was like a scholastic something.
Yeah, like you just brought a piece of paper into your teacher,
right?
And if they didn't wipe their ass with it, you would hand it back, and they'd go, "Yeah, give them the ticket."
You
I don't
got
know
an
what
award.
I don't know what kind of asshole teacher you'd have to be to go what. No.
No.
He's not getting anything. Take it back. Put a big X through it, a big frown face, and send it back. But I remember you got one of those trophies, and I thought, this kid must be a genius.
Right.
I didn't bother even bringing mine in, and I wouldn't even know where to have brought it in. Because I was going to, like, hippie free-range school.
Right.
And I knew I was a dumbo, and I knew no one was going to fill this thing out. And I didn't know enough to know, look, you could just take the paper home. Your dad could fucking fill it out. Signed Mr. Johnson on the bottom and hand it back.
Right, Uncle Timmy could have signed it. Didn't matter.
Didn't matter, but I knew I wasn't scholastic achievement material. But Chris was, and Chris, not only that, Chris could read and he could write. He was really different than a lot of the young people I knew growing up.
Right. I had a knack for spelling and a knack for math, but the social part of my life soon took over.
Yes. And what happened was, is Chris was a almost feminine young lad. He was sort of willowy. Chris is half Hawaiian and half German, but he's dark skinned. And if you see pictures of Chris when he was, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old, he almost looks like a pretty flat chested girl.
Right.
And then puberty kicked in and all hell broke loose. And The thing that was funny is, remember I used to throw you around like a rag doll?
Yeah.
We would wrestle, and I would get so bored wrestling with Chris that I would just let him pin me, and then we'd just see how long it took me to throw you off and pin you.
Adam used to pull a Shazam move. We had a thing with my little brother where we'd pin him for a while, and he would say the magic words Shazam and be able to throw us all off.
And I never, see, I didn't kick into anything. I don't have genes. I have bad genes. I didn't have genes to kick into. Chris had genes to kick into. So when he went puberty, it's sort of, you know what it's like? It's like this. When, before puberty, everything is equal. Because you got no gonads working. It's just a level playing field. And then after puberty, it's like you're on testosterone. You're juicing.
Right.
You are taking, you are going to the Balco lab in San Francisco, and you're Barry Bonds. And I'm just a skinny white kid trying to get by at that point, and it wasn't working. And Chris just kicked in. And I saw some of my other friends, it just kicked in. Now, for Ray was always that way.
But you know, when is this? It's like junior high? It's like seventh grade, eighth grade?
It was a weird thing, probably about the eighth or ninth, probably about the ninth grade. All of a sudden, the guy who I was always stronger than is like the same strength as me. And then 6 months later, he's stronger than I am. And then a year later, he's twice as strong as I am. Could never figure it out. Your phone's blowing up, by the way. And it was like, it's weird. It was like some kind of drug, almost like Incredible Hulk. Type drug starts coursing through your veins. So I, who used to be more, well, you go ahead and brag about me.
Well, listen, I'll go back a little bit. In about the eighth grade, and I'll never forget, Adam and I would pal around, and we were not popular at all. We were athletes. We were always on the football field or basketball or the track and the long jump and never really crazy excelling at any of them except for football and baseball as well. And Adam took off in baseball and he was good and I was just mediocre and wasn't that interested anyway. But Adam and I used to get called fags. We were shrimps. We were small. We were not big. And this is just prior.
No, we weren't shrimps though.
Not shrimps.
And Ray was the only guy calling us fags. By the
right.
way,
Ray was his size, and it was in. And I met Ray and Adam from between fifth and sixth grade, and Ray was already his size. He was already over 6 feet tall and a giant human being at between fifth and sixth grade, the summer of fifth before sixth grade.
I hate to back up for a second. When does Ray enter the picture? How does
Ray enters the picture over at Colfax Elementary, and I met him in the fifth grade. But we didn't play Pop Warner football with Ray because Ray was so big that even though he was young, he had to play like two divisions above us because he weighed so much. And he was a year older than us, which I always sort of forgot about because emotionally he always seemed like 10 years younger.
Right. And he did second grade twice.
He did second grade twice.
Right. All right. To give Ray.
How do you fuck up second grade,
by
the way?
He came from Germany.
You didn't color correctly. You didn't put those blocks in, right?
Right. He says it was because he came from Germany, but I'm not buying it.
Full of shit. So Chris and I met up, started playing Pop Warner football, and what happened?
Well, I'll bring it home from what I was saying. We were average in size, maybe a little bit bigger than average in the eighth grade before going into ninth grade and into high school. And what happened was in ninth grade I started to grow a bit, like Adam said. Adam was. Yeah, a baseball player as well as a football player. But my growth spurt happened at 15 years old, between 14 and 15, when we started hitting puberty. And, you know, every time I start thinking back to that time, it is such a funny time of like, you know, just discovery, really. Not just in the sense that your mind went to, but in, you know, all the other senses as well. But the problem back then was, is because of our upbringing, in retrospect, is we didn't have any confidence, or, you know, we wouldn't really, I mean, kids today will talk to you. You know, a young man will come up to me and, excuse me, sir, can I have, you know, and ask you for something. That we weren't doing any of that. You know, we were digging in dumpsters for inner tubes that had one hole in them instead of multiple holes, one that we could actually repair.
Yeah, I mean, our idea of a weekend was we'll go to the Schwinn shop and we'll do some dumpster diving at the Schwinn shop, because sometimes the Schwinn shop will throw away inner tubes that are kind of fucked up, but not totally fucked up. Like, exactly. The valve stem's not ripped off.
Right.
It's just a couple of holes. And there's some handlebars in there. They're bent up because the guy got hit by a truck. But we could unbend them.
Right.
And maybe there's a seat post in there that's been fucked up too, but we could straighten it out. Literally going through the dumpster at the Schwinn shop looking for shit that the bike shop threw away. A lot of dumpster diving, by the way, not just the Schwinn shop. A lot of forging. We spent, I've said this many times. I don't know how it works. I don't know what our parents were thinking. But we were like raccoons in a campsite dumpster. Lots of begging, lots of forging, lots of mooching. We mooched, man. I mean, we mooched at the Schwinn shop. We mooched all our friends. Yep. We'd mooch. Later on, it was mooching rides and food. It was always mooching something.
Mooch anything. Go water skiing. Try to go mud. Try to do anything.
Just wandering around and mooching. And I, Chris, here's how bad I had it. I would mooch off you.
Right.
And you're a moocher.
And I am a moocher, I'll tell you. When we, you know, when we got a little bit older, right into this period of 8th and 9th grade going into 10th is when puberty kicked in, as I said. But when we started to get hungry, we started to get really hungry and volume hungry.
Chris was an eater. I was a crazy eater. And Ray was a crazy eater. And people don't fully understand the difference between eaters and not eaters. As an eater, I would go nuts for food. And I would go to Chris's house because at a certain point, Chris's parents got back together for a few years.
Right.
They moved into a shitty house in the valley, although I thought it was a palace because it had wall-to-wall carpeting.
Me
and
too.
It had central air. And when I would sleep over at Chris's house, I felt like I was being punished. And now looking back on it, I would say, in a weird way, I was being punished, because there's a few things. When you're a kid, you have no idea what you're into other than you want this shit or you don't want that shit or you want to eat this, you don't want to eat that, or you don't really know where you're at. Like, you have to get away from yourself.
Right.
Then when you get away from yourself, you look back at yourself and you go, Jesus, I was class clown. I was always cracking jokes. I was always up in front of the audience screwing right. around. And then right out of high school, I went right to Valley College. And I was like, do you have a radio station? What's going on with your radio station? How do I get on your radio station? And they're like, fuck off.
Right.
And I was like, all right, I'll go dig ditches for 10 years. But
yep.
Now looking back on it, I knew where I was going back then. I just didn't know where
didn't
I was
know
going.
You knew
I didn't know
going.
I knew. But right. I was. Oh. I took, I don't even know if you guys know this, me and our old friend Zeb, when I was like 18, took one of those like Columbia School of Broadcasting, you know, pay yeah. $108 and make a tape and shit. I even forgot about it.
I forgot about it too.
The point is I was attracted to radio since I was in high school,
yeah.
and it took me a full 12 years to even come close to it after that, you know. I mean, all through my 20s and into just before 30. But looking back on it, back to me being tortured, there's a few things. A, I ran hot. And I didn't know I ran hot. I just ran hot. When you run hot, you don't know you run hot. You just think everyone else is that way, too. Like, well, man, it's hot in here. Isn't it hot in here? And everyone's like, I'm not hot. Oh, man, I'm sweating. I'm killing myself.
Always.
I was always hot. My head was always sweating, and I was always running hot. And we lived in a house with no air. There was never air in the house, and there was never air in the car. And right. to make matters worse, we never had a garage. So my mom would have her Dodge Dart or VW Squareback or something parked on an asphalt driveway with no tree, no canopy, no cover, no carport, no nothing. Just sitting out there baking in the sun. And then I would climb into the back with the fake Naga hide or fake vinyl and then just be in that car just dying. Just, oh, man, I'm dying. I'm dying in here. And the house was the same way. I slept on the back porch, no insulation. Just a flat roof. You could see the 2x6, probably 2x4 ceiling and the plywood. And it would just bake out. I would just bake out there. And I didn't have a fan. I was just like, oh, man, I'm miserable. What's going on?
The room was 5x8.
My room was a service porch that you could touch one wall with one hand and touch the other wall with the other hand. It was probably 4'9" and it was 8 feet long.
Exactly.
And I had a weird little cot mattress in the corner. It was a prison cell.
It was awful.
Is it the size of a prison cell or not?
It is. It's 5x8. It's tiny. It's smaller
and
than a
prison cell.
The
water heater in it. I'm sure that pilot going all night was not doing me any great good either. It was probably another heat source that's driving me nuts. Had a water heater in there. It's probably illegal now.
Right.
Had the electric meter in there. Like Green Acres, the guy would have to come into my room to read the meter.
Right.
Imagine a dude walking into your room, opening your closet, moving your shirts aside, and reading the meter every day. Washing machine, no dryer. I always specify no dryer because we did not own a dryer.
Oh, they had the clothesline out back.
We had the clothesline out back. And for the winter months, we had the weird fold-out rack thing that went over the floor register. That a big old floor register. There was no central air, obviously. There was two forced air heater registers, one in the front of the house and one in the back.
In the crawl space.
And they were big. They were like 2 foot by 3 foot.
Right.
And if you walked on them, you'd burn your feet.
Right.
And you couldn't really get around them because there wasn't any room inside the house.
Right.
And you'd open this rack up and you'd put the rack on top of the heater and then you'd hang your socks over it. But here's why, and also I had the meter. So the meter man, like Green Acres, would have to come into my back door and into my room and open the closet and move the shirts aside and read the meter every single month. That guy must have been like, first off, why didn't that guy call Child Protective Services and had my parents reported?
If that was now, he would.
You couldn't live in a room with a meter, a water heater, and a washing machine, could you? I could have drowned.
No, been you can't have a water heater inside
or
like that.
Died of carbon monoxide poisoning. So that was my room. And again, it was exposed. It was a porch, so there was an exposed ceiling.
2x6 with some, 1x whatever on top of that.
It was hotter than shit. And what I would do, what this is leading me to, is I would sleep over at Chris's house. And the first thing I would do is go to eat, and there'd be pork chops.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd be like, oh, shit, the mother load. Pork chops. This is pork. It's breaded and breadcrumbs and egg yolks. It's deep fried and fat. I mean,
shake and bake, baby.
Pass the apple sauce. Oh, gratin potatoes. Like, holy shit. I would go nuts. And the thing is I knew Chris when I was a massive eater. Or I was desperate. I wasn't a massive eater. I was a desperate eater.
Right.
I ate like they ate on Survivor. When they win the challenge,
right,
and they send them to the luau, and they're like, because they know they ain't going to get any more for a long time. So that's how I would eat. And then Chris became a huge eater once puberty kicked in. But I once, when I would sleep at Chris's house, I would get up in the middle of the night, go over to the thermostat, turn the air on, and then go sleep by the wall register where the cold air came out.
And maybe hit the fridge on the way.
Hit the fridge, too. I'd been busted a few times. But I remember sleeping. I remember thinking to myself as like a 13-year-old, there is a hole in your wall, not in your window.
Right.
Inside the house. There's a magic hole in the wall inside the house from which cold air pours. Oh, my God. I'm going to sleep with my head, my head, which was always on fire.
Right.
I'm going to sleep with my head right by this port where the magical cold air comes out of. And I couldn't figure it out because we did in the den where the TV was, We had one wall mount air conditioner, and it was shoved in that.
Right.
And so during the summer, we'd all just sit in this little room, close the door, and just run that one Maytag air conditioner all the time. But then when you went to your room, it was burning up again. I couldn't figure out. Chris had a room that had an air conditioning port
Central
in it.
Central air.
I couldn't. I was freaking out. I couldn't. And so I would turn it on, and I would also make a lot of midnight food runs, too. Like, I wasn't even hungry. I would just get up and open that fridge.
So what? This is like a Friday or Saturday night, and so you're just stocking up your body.
Friday night. Any night.
Any night, because Adam had a little bit different of, well, by the way, that's what my dogs do now, is they lie right in front of the register.
Yeah.
So there he is. My dogs run hot. Ace ran hot. They lie right in front of the register.
That's what Molly does. She lays right in front of the... I have one in the bedroom. She lays right in front of it, sucks all the cold air, and just warm air comes out of her ass. And that's what the room feels like. Literally blocks the register with her fat ass, just leaning, presses up against it. But yeah, We had a policy over at the Corolla house, which is no fucking policies.
That's right. There were no rules. Ace could, like, it wasn't, if I wanted to go spend the night somewhere, which was only Adam was pretty much my only friend. I mean, that was it. Can I go stay at Adam's? Which was, it was rare, and it was never to stay at his mom's house. When his dad moved from one crappy house to a better crappy house, then I would go spend the night. But I had to ask. Adam didn't have to ask. But there were no rules. There was no, like, set dinner at Adam's house. Like, my house had a bit of structure. My mom was on the job, trying to be on the job, where she came off mean. Now that I'm a parent, I realize what a nightmare we must have been, because we would plow through, like, Adam and I would eat, I'm not kidding, we would eat, you know, 15 pork chops. My mom would come home and literally cry a little bit and say, I was going to have those for dinner. And, like, she had to dream up a whole nother dinner because Ace and I dusted. Like, if I'd get a box of cereal, or we'd get a hold of a box of cereal, we'd eat the whole box of cereal and the entire half gallon of milk from opening it until throwing it in the trash in one sitting. So whoever's responsible to go and get the replacement parts for what we've eaten is screwed.
Yeah.
Right.
I wouldn't just leave. I would tell whoever, my mom or my dad, I'm going to go sleep over at Chris's house.
This could be any day of the week.
He wasn't getting any grief about it.
Didn't matter what day it was.
No,
it was always a good day. Because it was me not hanging around burning kilowatts, eating stale crackers or whatever the hell I did around there.
Now let me ask you guys, because I wasn't with you guys for the beginning part of, I guess, growing up and socializing.
Yeah, you're coming soon.
But when did Chris start to separate from you, that his socializing started to blossom?
The ladies started to appreciate Chris not long after puberty had blessed him.
Right, and just a bit into 10th grade.
Yeah, and somehow the ladies discovered Chris, and Chris was the number one ladies' man at North Hollywood High, and I would say beyond as well.
But North Hollywood is the starting point for Chris.
Yeah, Chris didn't.
Zero Walter Reed.
Chris
zero.
Did not have any success, as did I, in junior high. And
and no attempts at trying, right? Not at this
point. You know, we had there's a couple of dates here and there, but nothing really to speak
nothing,
of.
Nothing good. We were.
I mean, Christy Canyon's sister asked me to the Sadie Hawkins dance. That was about as far as I got.
And I got a date.
Oh, and Esther Chiladenko. Yeah, that's right. I forgot. I had a girlfriend for a little while in junior high. Esty, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, she turned out to be hot.
She did, and I got a date with the same Bardas Bainey with Christy Canyon's sister, too. And I remember I rode her on my handlebars to what was going to be our high school, to a North Hollywood High School football game. We took a spill, and she got a black eye. And she got a black eye. I can't remember exactly how we wiped out. I just remember the result. and that was that she had a black eye. And the funny part is, and this is just how you are as a kid, I didn't want to be seen with her then because she had a black eye. You know,
it
I was
like domestic abuse.
I was embarrassed, you know, to be with her.
But Chris and I, you know, fine, we got to high school. I moved out of my mom's crappy house in that little porch in the back of the house. And by the way, you know your room sucks when you move out and it doesn't turn into anything. Like, it's not, oh, now this is going to be your dad's office.
Right.
Or his den.
Didn't your dad ask you, actually, we need to park the cars in the garage or something?
Well, that's after I got out of the garage. When I moved out, follow along, Weezer. When I moved off the service porch, you know what that place is now? Just storage. It's just a bunch of boxes sitting back there. It's not even big enough to make a room out of.
You could make it a pantry. I mean, that's how small and, you know, nasty. If you were going to fix up that, if you called it a room, it wouldn't be a room. It would be a pantry or a closet.
If you were a real estate agent and you were, like, showing clients that house and you said, and now let me bring you to the third bedroom, they would start laughing.
Right.
And go, no. This is not a one bedroom, you know, this is not one bath, three bedroom. This is one bath, one and a half bedroom. So my sister's bedroom couldn't really be called a bedroom either. And that's a storage room now, too. That's not even big enough. You never seen my sister's bedroom.
Oh, it was
that
just
thing
a
was
little box with
seven
no
foot
windows.
By 7 foot with a 12-foot ceiling.
It is the oddest house because it's shaped. The size
it was shaped
shape
like
is-
Easter Island. It was her room was shaped like one of the Easter Island heads. Like, it was literally 7 foot wide, 7 foot long, and 14 foot high.
Mm-hmm.
It was shaped like the Washington Monument. Crazy.
I know.
Whole house was fucked up.
It was, and I would
two
not-
front doors. There were two front doors right next to each other.
They were at a 90-degree angle right there. And I wasn't ready to jump into high school. I wanted to finish about this house. And when I first went to eat at Adams, now his mom, Chris is her name as well. His mom was like a hippie lady, and I didn't know. And she was healthy. She was really into toxins in the air and, oh, that's bad for you and stuff. Now, in the backyard there was a hammock with a pot plant under it. I remember that. It was like a macrame, you know. I love that word.
The car was macrame. Yeah. The refrigerator was macrame. The roof was macrame. Everything was macrame.
Yeah, right. And she was really into health food. So, like, it was always a joke in growing up, like, going for, like, trick-or-treating at, you know, Adam's house. It was a big, giant joke because it'd be, like, an apple or a walnut. And it's all you ever heard with the horror stories about, like, razor blades and apples and stuff. But it would really, you'd get a walnut.
Chris, just say this. I've been complaining about this shit for the last 20 years, or at least 10 on the radio. Am I exaggerating at all with any of this shit that I'm complaining about?
Not at all, and that's what I'm telling
I'm
you.
I'm saying I'm probably not doing it justice. It was worse than what I'm saying it is.
Well, right, because I'm on the outside looking in. I was coming from a dysfunctional, broken home myself, and to go over to Adam's house was not... It was way better to be at my house, and my house wasn't great.
Yeah, your house was fucked up, but my house was not a lateral move.
It was somewhere you couldn't even really be there because there was nothing. You couldn't go to Adam's room and sit. We would do things like get a milk carton with a board that we found in the gutter.
Great,
and that was a bicycle jump or I'd go to eat there.
The one plus to living at that house is we had a dirt front lawn. So we could do all our bike antics on the front lawn without worrying about fucking it up. Like, your dad would tell you to get your bike off the lawn. You're tearing it up. You're making skid marks.
Right.
We didn't have anything on the lawn.
We were Brody free.
No sprinklers, no nothing, just dirt.
And the good part is he lived across the street from the elementary school where, of course, there wasn't a gate to go and we had to jump over the gate.
Hop the fence.
Right.
And Ray would call my house the barn. The bad thing is you could see my house from the schoolyard. So it was always kind of embarrassing to see the crappy dirt house on the other side of the street. And by the way, that's why I am who I am today in terms of I like architecture, I like design, and I like shit to be put away, and I want shit where it goes because I come from this chaos, and it always bothered me.
Right.
All the secondhand thrift store shit, all the carpets that people were throwing away that we would use. Our sofas would be shit that people were throwing away. We'd put a sheet in them. My dad never bought a piece of furniture. I don't think my dad's ever bought a piece of furniture his entire fucking life.
Right. So, what you know, some people that are close with Ace Man might say he went way the other way, and he really is. He really likes it neat, and the appearance from, I mean, wouldn't look anything close to that. Yeah, because the house that his dad had simultaneously was also a shitbox. was another dirt front lawn shitbox.
That would and, be I. This would be a very interesting competition if you could build a time machine and go back to 1975, and it'd be one of those things like Alcoa presents at the NFL. Which is the worst shitbox? Right. I could take 100 people, walk them through my mom's shitbox, and then drive them over to my dad's A-frame shitbox over on Vantage Street in North Hollywood. And man, you could have a battle royale to figure out which was the shittier shitbox. Like you could go, well, mom's house is a shitbox, but dad's house is a shitbox in a shittier neighborhood.
Right.
But it does have wall-to-wall carpeting, even if it's the green, shitty pile from the 70s porn films.
Right.
It also, it has a little bit of a front yard, even though it's mostly dirt. It's a dirt driveway versus the gator-backed asphalt driveway that's all sun-bleached
and fucked
up.
The whole street was dirt, I believe.
The street was dirt. The alleys were dirt. It was really like entering the Old West. They should have just had saloon doors in front of that fucking house. The backyard was fucked up. I would have to say that as shitty as my mom's pile of shit house was, I would say my dad's house was shittier.
I would too. It was.
He did have that whole garage, and it was a block away from the high school, so it was kind of a cool meeting kind of
different
pit
house.
Stop.
Stoner.
This is when his
different
dad lived
house.
On Oxnard.
Oh, the Oxnard house.
Yeah, that's before he moved
house.
Over. Yeah, that's when things got
That's why
good.
We kept saying Vantage and 1975
I was on the phone
dirt
with Ray.
Front and dirt front lawn. And yes.
Sorry.
No, later we moved into a normal house. That house was a palace. It had two bathrooms and two bedrooms.
Oh, yeah,
and it was 1,650 square foot palace. My dad's A-frame house on Vantage, you never saw that house.
Well, right. You drove me down the street.
That house was a
weird.
Wicked pile
it was a
of shit.
Dirt street.
Yeah, no curbs, no sidewalks.
My dad
no,
had dirt
just
street.
A mailbox out front. That's how you knew where it was.
And speaking of rooms, it was a one bedroom.
Yeah.
My dad, and it was an A-frame, and there was a loft at the top. And I used to sleep up in the loft. Do you know how fucking hot it got in that loft? You couldn't stand up straight in the loft. The ceiling was too low, and it was pitched at 45 degrees. But it would be 111 degrees during the summer, and I would just sweat up there. That's why when I'd go to Chris's late, right? First move to the fridge, second move to the AC vent.
Absolutely.
That was the move.
And that clip from 2009. Thank you, Aaron, for that listener request. All right, for our final clip of the day, we have another listener request. This is from Melissa Lee. And Melissa writes, "Hey guys, I've been watching or rewatching Crashing on HBO.
Great show.
And yeah, it's so good. And remembering that my first introduction to Pete Holmes was a delightful appearance on ACS. I could be off on the year. I think it was around 2016, 2017. But anyway, thank you. And Chris, you're doing great on the show. Thank you, Melissa.
You left in the part she's wrapping up Christmas presents, and she knows it's from December. But you left in the part where Chris is so special and pretty. And he's a great musician, and his face is beautiful.
I want to get to the clip. But anyway,
I
Melissa,
like her memories of her Christmas, December of 2016.
She knew it was December because she was listening while wrapping Christmas presents, and I like that. Like you remember where you were and what you were doing, and that kind of helps trigger the memory there. So Melissa, we do have the clip. It's from December of 2016.
Adam Carolla Show, 1975. Pete Holmes, Gina Grad, Brian Bishop, December of 2016. This is part one, part two tomorrow on the Carolla Classics feed. And I agree, Chris is doing a fantastic job.
Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
And Bald Brian.
Okay. Are you kidding me?
That's the voice of the man whose ass I just kicked in our fantasy football league.
Good.
A dominating 0.7 point victory. Less than a point I beat your son by. An embarrassing accomplishment for me, because I know you don't care about fantasy, but picture this. Sonny is a 10-year-old who almost beat me by playing two guys who were ineligible. One guy on IR, one guy who was suspended, Michael Floyd. And I beat him by less than a point.
Wow.
Humiliating.
That's how you learn.
I'll take it.
We had a
God wants me to win.
We had a good catch in the living room last night when he's so hyper-vigilant, he has to make sure Philly Cheesesteak is out of the room, because if Phil gets the ball...
he's unstoppable.
The ball's done with.
He's like Jerome Bettis.
Yeah, and he has this gene that the ladies in the house don't have, which is he protects his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's a dude thing. I'm sure like more. I don't know what the percentage of car covers deployed are, but it's got to be 86-14
minimum. Dude,
it's a dude. So if it take the car cover. Let's just take the car cover.
I would need photographic evidence of a woman using a car cover.
I would never use a car cover.
Yeah, there's been a couple of Subaru Justies back in the day that were covered on the lesbian kibbutz. No, if you take, I've never thought about this, but if you use as a sort of yardstick to measure, I'm protecting my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, your car is the most valuable your stuff mm-hmm. you're ever going to leave on the curb or outside the house or in the parking lot or whatever it is. You normally don't leave $40,000 worth of your stuff out on the curb unless you get into a pretty good blowout with the old lady.
Mm-hmm.
Dudes, even as I always say, Gary Fultard over there, religious about covering his car. I've never had a conversation with a female that I've dated or worked with or any, you know, I do get a lot of, hey, you're the fix-it guy, or you know about mm-hmm. cars, my car's making a weird noise, or how often should I really have the oil change, or blah, blah, blah. I get a lot of, hey, you're that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Never heard a conversation about a car cover with a female.
Like I said, I need evidence. I think we're going to get tweets tomorrow that are like apocryphal, like my aunt once had a friend who covered her car. Like no one, no first-hand experience.
But don't you think that makes whatever's inside the car more tempting? Because it's like you're trying to keep people out?
No. I think it's a dude who likes his paint and hates oxidation. Mm. But again,
what percentage of cars that are covered are worth covering?
That's kind of my point.
The car itself, though.
I find that most guys, they don't make a lot of truck covers because people don't cover their truck so much. I find when a guy has a car that he wants to keep, I'll tell you here's the number one car cover dude, but then we'll drill down even further on this hot button issue.
That everyone's teeming about.
Yes. Car covers are they're not for rich guys in Ferraris.
Mm-hmm.
That's a kind of Hollywood version. They're for guys who saved for 11 years to buy a Mustang that was 4 years old, and that is their baby.
Oh. Their prize.
It's $8,700 worth of used Mustang, but that is their Mustang.
Yeah.
That's it. The guy who has the Jag for free, like me, or gets the lease, that's the company car, 7 Series BMW, or just the one where the guy makes a bunch of bucks, and every 3 years he steps into a new sled, that guy doesn't cover his car. And the poor guy who's driving the gardener's truck or whatever, he doesn't cover his car.
Right. It's a sweet spot.
It's the sort of guy who's just got that one car. It's his pride and joy.
He's
and that's
tinkering
the one.
With Chevelle for years.
Yeah, that's the one he's looking after.
That makes sense.
Well, now, I've never seen a woman cover a car.
No.
And as long as we're breaking it down and you're just talking about the difference between men and women, the car's just the car. I mean, it's not like, well, it's a dude mobile or it's a, you know, it's a fallopian sled. It's just a car.
Right.
And I think both people have the same desire, which is,
have the car aesthetically look as good as you can have it look. I mean, be clean and not covered with bird droppings, right, or what have you. So in terms of the car, I don't think that changes that much. You could say that more women drive a minivan than a Corvette, mm-hmm, so the Corvette guy would be more apt, yeah, to do it. But even if you sort of flushed out, mm-hmm, those two and you just went to the Audi A4 or BMW 3 Series, a much greater percentage of guys cover the car, sure, yet the car's the same and the goal's the same. Why is such an alarmingly high rate of guys cover the car versus the women? I think it's our gene. I think guys, mm, Sonny has the I'm protecting my stuff.
Protect your stuff.
Gene. Yeah. He, yep, does not play with his good football when Philly cheesesteak is in town, because he'll go with a strip sack, which is sort of a strip rape sack that he'll do on Sonny and then make off with his ball and pop it. He'll, yeah, play with the bad ball and he will wait till Phil is outside. As a matter of fact, Phil, that's how I know, because he'll be outside playing with the ball and I'll just hear Phil's like inside, like Attica, Attica. He's big and he's black and he's loud, yep, yep, and he's banging his paw against the glass slider door. Chung, 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 because he sees Sonny mocking him. Yeah, running around, throwing the ball. So Sonny makes sure. By contrast, I got home after we watched our movie last night, walked into my office and saw Lynette's high top fur covered slipper. Devoured.
Oh, no.
Devoured. Because Philly loves a slipper. Lynette hates closing the door. And Natalia can't do it either. And that's all Sonny does.
Yeah. I saw Rogue One yesterday, and this is reminding me of how I used to almost catalog my like Star Wars action figures as a little kid, a little boy. I would like make sure they were like put away at night, like in their little, you know,
you
containers.
Tuck them in.
Or whatever. Well, not tuck like
little blankies.
Turn them down, put a little chocolate.
Sure.
On.
Sure.
No, but M&M on the thing. No, but I'd like put them in their containers. Yeah, make sure they were covered and protected
To that end, I have a question for you two. Do you keep any of your shoes in their original shoe box?
No,
my nice shoes. I did.
Of course, you
I
do.
All
you tuck in your GI Joes.
The only thing the shoe box
Reese's pieces on their pillow,
and their little Crown Royal sack as, yeah, he tucks them in.
Yeah. See you tomorrow, Hawkeye.
Here's the only role a shoe box plays in my life, which is I haven't been burned in a while. First off, I haven't bought shoes at a shoe store in a while, and then most of the stuff I get is just kind of like wardrobe, mm-hmm, stuff. They do a fitting, you do a shoot, I just did one. They do this thing. They have tons of stuff. They go, this stuff's all got to go back. This stuff you can have.
Oh.
And then I go, oh, all right. And they go, don't you want any of it? And I go, nah, I got jeans. And they always go nuts. Yeah. Because to them, it's like a junkie turning away a syringe. These women are like, are you kidding me? And I'm like, I'm good. But I will get some freebies. The shoebox, the only role the shoebox used to play in my life is I would go on the upper shelf of my closet. I would forget about it. And then at some point, I'd be cleaning out my closet and I'd go, ooh, a brand new box with the K-Swiss on here. What lurks inside of this box? And how did I got some brand new tennis shoes. And then I'd pop it open and it would always be the shoes I wore to the Foot Locker that I should have just thrown,
yeah,
out, but they don't really give you that option. They go, would you like to wear out the new ones? And you go, yep. And then they give you the box. We put the old ones in. There's nothing to do with the old ones. Yeah. You've already decided those things are past their due date.
Yeah. Out of sight, out of mind.
You can't really throw them away.
No.
It's weird. We need to go, we need to move to a neighborhood where we can throw them over the power line.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what to do with them. They go back in the box, yeah, and they'll be there long enough for me to forget. And then I think there's something new and cool waiting for me.
Just in time to be disappointed.
Mm-hmm. Now, we are going to do a little Baldywood.
Yeah.
We got a little Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
That's the new Star Wars movie.
It is a new Star Wars movie.
Isn't it called like a Star Wars movie?
We'll get into it exactly. Okay. I believe it's I wrote down in my little notes, like, I think it's confusing for a lot of non-geeky fans, like, where this comes in the continuum of the whole thing.
Is this a full-fledged Star Wars movie?
This is exactly what I was anticipating.
And feels like it's too soon. And it also feels like I've not seen as much before it like I saw with the other ones. It used to be it was a long time in the making, and then 6 months worth of build up, mm-hmm, and then this one sort of showed up.
Yeah.
And so every once in a while, it's like when you're skimming through your sometimes you'll be skimming through your cable and you'll see like Superman versus Aquaman or something. You go, oh, let me check this out. And it's animated or it's something else. Yeah. It's not what it, it's not what it was. So you're going to tell us about that.
Absolutely.
All right. First, I'll tell you about Boll & Branch. Love these guys, especially around the holidays, man. Get yourself some sheets. So comfortable. They come in a gift box. So you don't have to wrap it. Even then, it comes in a weird... Well, speaking of shoes, those cool sort of sacks to put the shoes in with, like, the drawstring in them. It's what they come in, but the sheets come in it. Put your shoes in the sack
after you're done with that. Your old sheets.
That's right. And as you wash them, they get softer and softer because they're 100% organic cotton. Thousands of five-star reviews. Three presidents have slept on them. You can try them for 30 nights. If you don't love them, send them back and get a refund. So how can you go wrong with that? And again, good bad, good TV. Good sled, uncovered if you're Gina Grad, covered if you're Boll & Branch. Yep. 50 bucks off your set. You get a 50% off. Go to bollandbranch.com. Promo code ACE. That's B-O-L-L and branch. B-O-L-L and branch.com. Promo code ACE and save yourself 50 bucks. All right. So it is an interesting yardstick, just the covering of cars and how and it make and it makes sense. And all this stuff's like, it's not that big a critique. It's... Dudes are stuff oriented. Mm-hmm. Chicks are people, personality,
community,
pets. No, but they're emotionally oriented.
That's what I mean.
You know what I mean? I got a garage full of stuff, and my wife's got
a garage full of kids.
House full of kids.
Yeah.
That's the way we look at it. All right. Shall we do the Baldy one?
No, let's do it.
Yeah.
Baldywood, he will tell you if a movie's good. Brian will review the flicks that he's seen upon the big screen or in his Netflix queue. Before you spend bucks, remember his taste sucks. He loved that train wreck piece of shit, Transformers 2. Hooray for Baldywood.
Rogue One, a Star Wars story, as it is officially titled. Yes, it's directed by Gareth Edwards, director of Godzilla, the remake, which I, with your boy Cranston.
Yeah, he just told us he's going to be doing Teletubbies,
no,
the movie, or whatever.
He's doing Power Rangers.
Whatever the hell.
Oh, no.
It's called a payday.
He's doing the Backyardigans.
It's dark days.
Yeah.
No, he's doing a polite add on his pool.
It is funny that when you, I enjoyed the latest Godzilla movie. I mean, it was fun. It was, you know, it was fine.
It was what it was.
It was what it was, but it's fine. But you can see Cranston, like that scene when he had to put his wife in the air chamber and lock her out or whatever. You can see, like, oh my God, here's a great actor in a giant lizard movie.
Yeah. Actually, against the screen.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Okay, so let me explain this to you as best I can. The Rogue One is, okay, you have the original, you know, Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi. Then you have those crappy prequels that came out a few years ago, the George Lucas ones that were all cartoons.
And the Jar Jars.
The Jar Jar movies. Mm-hmm. And then you have this new one, the Force Awakens, with the J.J. Abrams movie that just came out. There's going to be three more of those, a sequel that continue on the whole franchise. They're planning, they being, I think, Disney and Lucasfilm, are planning on doing these one-off movies called, you know, Star Wars stories, you know, Rogue One. They're going to do, like, a Han Solo prequel, you know, young Han Solo, and, like, young Boba Fett. You know, they're going to do, like, these one-off. I believe the plan is to release them semi-annually, kind of like Harry Potter movies, you know, because these are huge cash cows. This movie made some hundred-some million dollars or something like that. It is a huge moneymaker.
It was 155 the opening
weekend. Get them out! Yeah, get them out there. So, this one, as I was, and Christy was the first one asked me, it's like, what, when is this? Is this a sequel? Is this a new one? Is this? I'm like, no, this takes place right, the events leading up to the original Star Wars movie, the one we all know with Luke and Leia and Darth Vader and all that stuff. This leads up to the events in that movie. This is about the plans, the mission to steal the plans to the Death Star so the Death Star may be attacked and destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's a lot of a big
mouthful. Does the Death Star have to pull a permit? And if they got to go to Van Nuys, they'll never get this thing built.
Well, it's a government project because it is funded by the Galactic Empire. So you got to feel like, you know, it's got to be pretty fast tracked.
What if they use deputy inspectors? Anyway, they'll never get it through plan check. But go ahead, I'm with you.
Okay, well, Rogue One takes place right before Star Wars, as we all know, and it stars Felicity Jones, Oscar winner for The Theory of Everything, the Stephen Hawking movie, Diego Luna. It's a very international cast. Ben Mendelsohn. I don't know if you guys know who that is. He's a great character actor. I love Ben Mendelsohn. You might recognize him from The Dark Knight Returns. He had a small role in there. Or Dark Knight Rises, excuse me, had a small role. Mads Mikkelsen, who is a great actor and has a great name. He's another one of those guys. He was the main bad guy in Casino Royale, the Bond movie with the first one, Daniel Craig. Great character actor. Love Mads Mikkelsen.
More testicular trauma.
Yes,
that's what I'm saying.
He was the guy doing the whipping. That's
him. I love it. I love seeing a leading man getting his sack traumatized. I mean, in a Bond genre, that's why I tune in. Yep. Not for the ladies, not for the gadgets. Sack drama. Yeah, that's what I love about it. Yeah.
Donnie Yen, Forrest Whitaker, and the voice of Alan Tudyk, former guest of this show, as he's K2SO. He's the droid. He's the robot in this movie. Sort of the C-3PO role, but a little...
Is it adorable?
No, it's much... This is the least kid-friendly movie of all the Star Wars movies, I think. This is actually one that is a little bit for adults. I have to check on this. Is it PG-13? Can anyone look that up for me? But it feels a little PG-13-ish. Mm-hmm. Let's play the clip, Gary. Here is the clip of Alan Tudyk as the robot and Diego Luna, and I'm going to talk about what I really liked about this movie, which is it is PG-13.
Yes. It is PG-13. Just give me a moment here on the clip.
What is something like this
I'll set it
draw in worldwide versus a J.J. Abrams version?
I think this will do a lot less because I think the initial...
I'm assuming that, but I just mean, is it...
I don't know. I have to imagine the initial confusion amongst the general movie-going public of, like, what is this? Where does this fit? Mm-hmm. Is this a real Star Wars movie? I think a lot of people don't know what this is and thus aren't as interested. The thing I liked best about the movie is this is a really well-written movie. Star Wars movies aren't known for being super well-written. They're visual extravaganzas and all that stuff. The funny you mentioned the permits and all that you're joking about, you're pulling the permits and everything. One of the things I liked about this is the characters all have very complicated relationships. This isn't like, I'm your father and we're fighting for the galaxies. For example, the main bad guy, Ben Mendelsohn, he's like a corporate middle management guy. Like, he basically is a guy who's struggling to climb the corporate ladder in the evil galactic empire. But he's up against, he's up against a supervisor who doesn't respect him, but he's trying to get the Death Star up and running. It's an interesting character. Like, you never see that in like a Star Wars movie.
Like Office Space.
He's kind of struggling against this corporate structure. And this is the opposite side. This is the good guys now, and you're going to see the main good guy, which is Felicity Jones. She has a weapon, and the robot and Diego Luna, who have an uneasy relationship with her, they're kind of on a bargain basis right now. They are they're discovering this weapon.
Mm.
Why does she get a blaster and I don't?
What?
I know how to use it.
That's what I'm afraid of. Give it to me.
Diego.
We're going to Jeddah.
Ship powered by leaf blower. It's a first in Star Wars history.
Where'd you get it?
I found it.
I find that answer vague and unconvincing.
Trust goes both ways.
You're letting her keep it. Would you like to know the probability of her using it against you? It's high.
Let's get going.
It's very high.
It's a fun character. It's a fun little comic relief in the middle of all this stuff. This movie takes a long time to get going. There's a lot of setup, as you can imagine, because no one knows any of these characters. There's no Han Solo. Right. There's no Princess Leia. There's no Luke. There's no anybody. But you eventually, the movie kicks in, has a great final act. Usually, these sort of battles are kind of like, all right, well, now they're going to blow a bunch of stuff up. It was a great battle. It was a great final act. I feel like a big problem, speaking of the end, the beginning, there's no iconic crawl. The Star Wars movies have that scroll.
Of course, Far Away.
They don't have any of that. Mm-hmm. It just kind of goes in, and you're like, oh, okay, I was kind of expecting that. And I feel like the fans, semi-ironically, needed that context. Usually you can kind of do away with the whole scroll thing, but now you're like, no, please, set it up. I'd like to know where we are and who these people are.
Yeah, let's slow it down, man. I can't drag my finger that fast. I have to drag my finger in the air.
Wind it back.
Yeah. People behind me tell me to sit down and go ahead and pocket my hand. It's embarrassing.
The last thing I should probably mention is the digital. Did anyone see this movie? Okay, the digital effects are excellent. They are wildly good. It's amazing how far we've come in terms of digital effects. That said, you had an analogy for something like this, where like you're doing well, and like it's the BMX the X Games analogy, where like you're doing well, you're going to try for that extra move that you don't really need to do, and that's maybe going to sink you. In this movie, there is an entirely CGI character, and it's Peter Cushing, the actor who was in the first movie. He reprises his role. He died in 1994.
They do a completely digital
Peter Cushing.
I don't know, wow. Gay slang, but keep going.
They do a completely digital Peter Cushing, and it's, for me, I knew he died, I knew who the character is, and I'm like, oh, that's weird. I mean, it's really effective, but I wonder if it's going to bump people. And after the movie, I said to Christy, I said, there was a character in that movie who was totally digital. Did you know who it was? She goes, no, I didn't know who it was. Wow. Which character was it? I explained who it was. He's throughout the movie. And he explained who it was, and she's like, I thought there was something weird about his face, but I thought he was just a creepy guy. Like, the digital effects are so convincing, and they convince Christy, who's very smart and doesn't know anything about Star Wars, that this was just an old actor.
Wow.
So it would be a huge, huge snub if they didn't get nominated for Best Visual Effects. It is quite the accomplishment.
Would you recommend this movie for a non-Star Wars enthusiast?
I really would. I really would, because it's as much it's a war movie in outer space more than any of the other Star Wars movies. This is a movie about a very specific event. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end. It doesn't go on about a lot. There's no Jedis. There's no lightsabers. There's no very little about the Force. It's not about the mythology. It's just a little story that is very effective.
What do you give it on whatever scale you have?
For fans, this is an A. This is an A plus. Fans are going to eat this up and love it. And for the average moviegoer, this is a solid see it in the theaters outing. I give it a B or even a B plus. I think people are really going to enjoy this.
All right.
Nice.
Hooray for Bollywood!
I liked it.
Pete Holmes is here. Yes.
Speaking of movies, we saw a great movie last night.
Yeah.
Very, very entertaining.
Yeah. It's, was it Why Him? Yeah. It's always good to see a comedy in a group. It's so much better. It's a fun movie. You know, it's probably going to get nailed by the critics, but I really don't. I always feel like if people are here and laughing, you know.
Yeah.
What else do you want?
I've read.
It was all right. I only laughed a few times. I laughed a few times.
I know. I've read a lot of reviews of like, it had a lot of laughs, but it just didn't hold together C-. And it's like, it's a lot of laughs. And it's really hard to get people to laugh. And it's an hour and 42 minutes. Like, well, where's the bar over here? Funny movie.
Charming actors.
Cast
funny.
Was great. Guys were sweethearts. Real quick, we'll talk to Matt, 42, from Florida. Matt?
Hey, Ace Man.
What's going on, man?
Get it on.
Get it on.
Walt, Gina, you guys are killing it lately. I love it.
Thank you.
Gina, your one-liners are phenomenal.
Oh, God bless you. I mean, sorry.
Oh, and that's the best drop in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Ace Man.
No.
I wanted to weigh in since that's the second best.
Yeah.
Since last summer, you brought up something about the King of Jordan and the killing of ISIS and the cages and stuff. Well, I was listening to that from Baghdad, actually. I'm in the Air Force, so I was fortunate enough to spend most of this year in the embassy in Iraq.
What do you do in the Air Force?
By trade, I'm a B-1 WISO, backseater of a B-1. So I'm kind of an older guy now. I don't get that.
I love the B-1. God, it's the sexiest airplane ever.
It is a bad, bad machine, and pretty proud of all the things that we're doing over there.
I've told you, it's like a skinny chick with big tits, or it's also like some of the greatest looking automobiles in the world are the GTs, the Grand Tours, not the little sports cars, the little zippy two-seaters, but the big, you know, that's what Aston Martin DB9s are. There's Aston Martin had one just called a V8 or V8 Vantage, but another one just called V8. Just big cars, but with big engines. Mm-hmm. And they're like big, but the idea of being sporty, the Gabby Reese of cars. Oh. 6'3".
Now you're putting a language I understand.
And hot, you know?
Yeah. Like, hot.
B1 is a huge plane that looks like a sports car. Love it. You sat in the back. What'd you do back there?
Well, we kind of do all the work in the back. The pilots have their hands full flying and getting us where we need to go, getting the refueling done. And in the back, we have on the left side, the guy's supposed to be the defensive operator, and then the right side is the offensive systems operator. But in reality, we kind of work together as a team to run everything back there. So we program the bombs. We run the targeting pod, you know, with the laser to find the targets and fix them. We run the defensive countermeasures when we're in a threat area, run the radar.
Are those defensive countermeasures? Are there some flares and stuff like that? Or is it a lot of radar jamming stuff? What is it?
All that. Yep, all that. We have a electronic jamming, you know, system that can do some things. And then there's chaff and flares as well. So,
If they get some heat-seeking missile locked onto them, they'll just shoot out the whole fireworks show. And it'll confuse the missile. Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, flares are designed to decoy heat-seeking missiles and chaff is to confuse radar-seeking missiles.
You know, here'd be my problem. My problem is if I had my finger on the button of the fireworks show that shot out of the ass of the B-1 and I didn't have to pay for it, I'd be like, I smell a threat coming on. Mm-hmm. And you'd be like, we're over the Van Nuys Airport.
There's nothing on the radar.
You never play it too safe.
I'm looking at the radar right now.
I'm dating a chick who lives in that condo under us. All right, here we go. Hey, look.
Funny story.
You want to play it safe or not?
Can you get it to spell, will you marry me?
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead,
Matt. I do remember flying low over Afghanistan, and we were trying to do a show of presence to show that the enemy that we were there.
Show of presence.
And, I like that.
And our pilot, well, that's what we called it, yeah. Mm-hmm. And my aircraft commander, his call sign was Miyagi, screamed at me, and he said, you will put one flare, we'll put one flare out every 3 seconds, approximately every 3 seconds, and when you're down low and it's at night, the flame that comes out the top and the shadow that races along the floor underneath you is really something to see. So
I can imagine.
It's pretty cool.
And it's only $721,000 a pop of taxpayer money.
Yeah. Hey, can't wait to wait to make America great again.
Matt, does that thing you're shooting missiles and dropping bombs and stuff, but there's no guns on that plane, is there?
No, although we like to tell kids at air shows that the pitot tubes are guns, but no, we don't. No guns. We have gravity bombs and we have some long range missiles.
By the way, next time that kid asks that, you just lift up your flannel shirt, show him the 44 you've got tucked in the small of your back, and go, yeah, there is a gun on this plane,
give
by the way.
Wink.
We do carry one apiece. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, in case the pilot tries to go broken arrow on your ass. Hell yeah. Oh, believe you me, that's a real-world scenario right there.
Missing, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's not a lot of very accurate Air Force bomber movies, I'm afraid. Well, there was back in the World War II ones were pretty good, but recent Air Force movies, perhaps not as accurate as they...
I don't know. I mean, Travolta going at it with Slater in the cockpit with the broken arrow. The beginning of that movie was awesome. They were boxing in a gym that had no lights. Just one big floodlight over the ring.
Atmospheric.
Interrogation lamp.
Like, I don't know what kind of gym doesn't have lighting.
I smell a basic cable commentary because I love that.
It starts off with them just like in the ring. It's got to be tough for the guys who are working the speed bag in the freeway. It's like, I can't see what the hell's going on over here.
Your form's great, trust me.
I hit myself in the face with a 10-pound dumbbell 5 times because I don't know where to stop.
Yeah, but your silhouette looks great.
They're having a boxing match in the middle of this ring that's just lit, and they're beating the crap out of each other. Travolta's mainly beating the crap out of Slater.
Sure.
They're talking the entire time. Neither one of them has a mouthpiece, which is kind of the first thing you put in.
You don't hit the money
maker. Oh, no headgear, no mouthpiece. All right. I'm sorry, Matt. I know this is your favorite film, but I want to watch 54 seconds of the beginning of Broken Arrow. I forgot. No headgear, no mouthpiece, lots of talk, and lots of head trauma. And no lighting. No lighting.
Travolta's in a long-sleeve T-shirt.
Just... I would assume that the Air Force frowns upon this much head trauma in its pilots. Because they're flying planes that are billions of dollars. And again, there's not a light in the entire gym, I do not believe. They're both not wearing headgear, and they're both beating each other to a pulp. This has nothing to do with sparring. This is just a flat-out street fight.
Brawl.
We encourage different types of things.
At any point in the scene, do they get close to making contact with each other's faces?
No, they don't. They do not do that. You can always tell a bad boxing movie if you turn the sound down. You'll see the punches get further and further apart.
You see what happened there? Huh?
No, all the lights are on.
I give you left, left. You think I'm going to give you another left, and I give you a right.
How how we get a mouthpiece at some point. About, okay?
You show your opponent one thing, you do something else.
Based on their perfect dental work, I doubt very much they do this very often.
Don't you remember? I don't remember what day of week it is. That's right. Everyone
such,
thought Ali's arms had run out.
Such great music, too.
But he's just setting foreman up. He's letting burps
all right,
off.
You got it.
Hans Zimmer
does the movie.
Young Hans Zimmer.
All right, so...
Back in the Coke days.
Wow. Matt, is that basically what goes on that B1? You guys got a ring in there? No, hold on.
He left.
I know. Put him on.
I'm not
sorry.
Ashamed to say you never saw that movie.
Oh! Jesus Christ. This is like the guy I worked with when I did the Hammer was the Foley sound guy, and I brought up Modern Romance, an Albert Brooks movie where the guy works as a Foley guy. It's the only movie where a guy works as a Foley guy. This guy works in the movie industry, and he's like, I haven't seen it. Like, me and Hench went ballistic on the guy. We limited it to like 20 minutes. Like, all right. So, Matt, you're in the rear with the gear, literally shooting the flares out.
Yes,
flying
sir.
That B-1.
Yeah, and running, putting the weapons where they need to go and talking with the guys on the ground that need the weapons and making sure they're taking out the bad guys.
Matt, please promise me you've done this one. Promise me you've done this one because it's every good movie, every good action movie I've watched is this one. When you see those Chinese bogeys, the MiGs they got from Russia, the China's flying now. When you see them, at some point you got to turn to the guy next to you and go, "We got company." Don't go, "Oh my God, there's a MiG." Go, "We got company." Yeah. We got companies, the coolest line ever when the MiGs come over the horizon. They come drop down through the clouds.
Yeah. It wouldn't kill you to slide your glasses down when you say it, too.
Yeah, we got company. Yeah, go ahead, Matt.
Oh, so that is the proper brevity term that they teach us in school, yeah.
Good.
All right. Yep. Smart. Mm-hmm. All right, thanks for your service.
Yeah.
Oh, what did you want to ask me?
Real quick. Well, it was just interesting. I was listening to your podcast when you were talking about the King of Jordan, how much you loved him. What he did to the ISIS pilot or the ISIS guys and executed him. I was actually over there listening to it at the time, and I had an opportunity to hang around Jordan a little bit, and it's a pretty neat country. I toured a little bit, and it's very safe. It's surrounded by a lot of craziness, but it's a very safe country. And I asked my tour guide, driver, bodyguard kind of guy I got to be friends with, that I said, "Why is it so safe here? Are you harsh on your criminals?" He said, "No, there just is no crime because it would bring shame. You know, that's shameful. You just don't do it." And I thought,
it's like Orange County.
Adam.
Yeah. Well, no, yeah. I love the King of Jordan was interviewed on 60 Minutes, and he's like, we found a lot of the guys that burned that pilot alive in the cage, and then we just beheaded them. And then, of course, and then we got to find the other guys, and they're like, oh, I love those little snowflake hand-wringing 60 Minutes guys. Like, you did
what?
And then what are you going to do with the other guys? They're like, we're going to behead them once we find them. And they're like, huh? Yeah. And it's like, yeah, that's what they know. That's what we know. And there's a way to avoid being beheaded. Don't put pilots in a cage and burn them alive. Yeah. And this part where it's like, but every life is precious. Not when you think it's a good idea to burn guys alive. We're fine with that. Mm-hmm. And by the way, it cuts down on the number of pilots getting burned alive. Yep. We cut the heads off of those guys. Yeah. Perfectly fine with it, and I like his answer. It's just sort of, what else would you like me to do? And that's how we achieve results with these people.
And it's a hell of a lot more humane than being burned in a cage.
I agree. So, Matt,
they love the king over there.
Well, good. He's a badass, man. He's over there. He's firing guns. He's he goes out and drills with the soldiers. It's like he's boots on the ground, man. Yeah, our kings just play golf.
Beer Sunday.
Funny to think of a king, but they have a king and he's doing well.
All right, good.
It's a bit of a throwback.
You're back in Florida now.
Yeah, I'm back home now. I'm about to hang it up. I'm retiring in like a month and a half.
Well, so now you're 42. Does that mean you get a job shooting flares for Delta or something?
Well, yeah, should be moving on to testing weapons, testing future weapons as well.
I'd like you to get a job in the commercial airline industry, But I'd like you to bring that same military mentality to it. So, like, when you guys are at O'Hare and you're like, we got trouble, 3 o'clock, that's American Airlines flight. Yeah.
Yeah. Young company.
That's what they want us to think.
You know what to do. Yep.
Get the flares out.
Yeah. Give him a little show.
Pop the hatch. I'm getting you start reaching for your piece, which you have tucked back there in the small of your back.
Let's send a message.
Yeah.
Yeah. They need to add window seats to those airlines. There's no window seats presently, but yeah, I like your idea.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Thanks, Matt.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate it. Let's see. All right. Pete Holmes is here. I'll answer a quick question. Cody, 28, Las Vegas. Cody?
Hi, gang. How's it going?
Good. How you doing?
Pretty good. So I had a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, with your knowledge of cars, construction, and common sense, if you could think of a reason why houses don't have electronic locks the way cars do, so you can just open and close them with a key fob.
I think they're starting to do stuff like that. When I do my new house, I'm going to do something like that.
Or the push button entry.
Yeah. I had this super lovely experience the other day, which is, I do not lock the doorknob. Mm-hmm. I lock the deadbolt.
Sure.
And a lot of people lock both, but the deal is nobody's getting through that deadbolt and then going to be thwarted by the doorknob.
Oh, I didn't count on that.
Yeah, so pretty much just do the deadbolt.
Yes.
But, of course, the deadbolt and the doorknob don't have the same key. And I do not have the key to the doorknob, but I don't lock the doorknob. It's unlocked constantly. I got home the other day. The doorknob was locked. I didn't have the key for that. I went around to the garage. I had the key to two deadbolts, zero knobs, both locked. Somebody was like working at my house doing the, I got to leave. I'll lock it up by locking the doorknob.
Yeah.
Right, except for I had no idea it was locked when I took Philly cheesesteak for a walk. So, yes, it would be nice. And in my next house, I'm going to do that because it is kind of insane. And this is something that just made me think of this. If you lose power, you need a way to do it, though, mm-hmm. a backup system, something I think you guys might find interesting. If you look in older cars, certainly older Italian cars, I'm not sure if they're American cars were this way or not. If you take a look at my old Lamborghini Miura I have from 1969, it has power windows. It also has a hole in the side of the door about 3/4 of an inch and a crank that is in the glove box, which is to say when this doesn't work, you can go ahead and get out of your vehicle this way. Because it's funny, 1969, they still didn't even have the power window part. It wasn't that consistent thought that, you know what, we're going to need a plan B over here, much like we talk about the landing gear with the manual crank. Although, miss that part in a movie. Get down there and crank it.
Wow, when's the last time you saw that?
Super cold. The doors are guys cranking.
His jacket flies off to show how fast it's going.
Yeah, the guy's flying the plane, losing altitude, talking to himself. Come on.
Just come on. Get there.
Yeah. I wonder if the other guy panics and screws up his dialogue. We got company. Huh?
Huh?
I mean, come on.
I mean,
come on. Pete Holmes is here. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with Pete right after this.
And that clip from 2016. All right, well, that will do it for today's Krilla Classics, but we do release a special Sunday episode every week, and if you want to get that, then subscribe to the Krilla Classics feed, and we will see you there. Once again, my name is Chris Loxamana. That's Superfan Giovanni.
Hey, everybody. Congratulations on the show hitting 14 years, and everybody's been listening all that time, and all the new listeners jumping on. I spoke to one of our listeners this weekend via email, Vinny Tortorich, and he finds that, you know, well, he can't listen to all 3,494 episodes, I think we have today, after the Damashek C. Thomas Howell was recorded. So he can't hear all of them, but when he goes back to classics, he is able to get all these moments and things he never knew about. And it turns out he actually is at 92 episodes, and I found out the day we were at 3,492. How odd is that? But just a fun little tidbit, and I'm happy all of you guys are still listening, and thanks for supporting the show. Mahalo and get it on.